Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
You are what you eat, and you are what you eat, eats. And you're even what you eat, eats, eats. Here's a clue, why don't you take a peek beneath your feet?
Welcome to Local Food Connections, a show about the power of locally grown food to connect us more strongly with our communities and the lands we inhabit. The show promotes sustainable food systems that foster resilience and empower people to make positive choices for themselves, their communities, and the environment. Local Food Connections is brought to you by Local Food Connect. We're broadcasting from Wurundjeri country and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. We respect the enduring strength of First Nations people and acknowledge their long heritage of agriculture and care for the land in which our food is grown. I'm pleased today to be joined by Elaine Pratley, founder of Peace Kitchen. I'm just going to tell you a little bit about Peace Kitchen because Elaine has given me a beautiful poster. Peace Kitchen is an organisation. It's all about connecting across difference through food and dialogue. It's an internationally focused initiative in response to communities that are becoming more polarised and fragmented, and Elaine sees the possibility of using food and dialogue to help people connect across that difference. So it's very much aligned with the values of this show. Elaine is affiliated with Monash and mainly Melbourne University in the field of peace building. Her doctoral thesis was titled Hungry for Peace, and she has now released her book by the same name. And the main contention of both the thesis and the book is that food is a powerful force in not only human connection but human conflict, which that's the idea that I found most interesting in Elaine's work. So enough from me. Welcome, Elaine.
Hi, good morning.
Would you please just tell us a little bit about your basic argument that food has power?
Well, I am a Malaysian by birth. Uh-huh. So if you ever had a conversation with Malaysians, we can't stop talking about food. We can go for hours and hours. And I grew up in that context and I've traveled around the world and in different jobs, I've always used food as a way to connect with people. It was just a common language that established trust, you know, a way of connecting with people. So that's how I got into food. And when I was doing my doctoral research, I wanted to look at young people and peace building. And it came very early in the research, I thought to myself, there's no way I'm going to get young people, 16-year-olds and up, to talk to me about peace and conflict in a workshop. I just thought, there's no way that they're going to tell me, Elaine, this is how I experience conflict. So I thought, what is something I could do that went beyond words? And I thought, why not draw on the power of food? And I'm not good at sports. I'm not good at arts. The only thing I could do was eat. And I thought, well, everyone, whatever language, whatever schools, skills we have a relationship with food, whether we like it or not. So I thought, why not use that as a method and also examine the power of food to affect peace, not just harmony, but what might we understand about peace and conflict through the lens of food?
Right. Mm. Okay. Can you talk to us a little bit then? Well, first of all, thank goodness the Malaysians have stepped up here because I don't want to stereotype people, but every Malaysian person I've met seems to have it's a very sociable culture. It seems to be very extroverted.
Yes.
And it seems to be all about connections. Yes. And it is a lot about food.
I mean, Malaysia is a very multicultural country. Yes. But at the same time, we have this glossy veneer of harmony. You know, I guess multicultural harmony, but that does underneath there's also issues of, you know, racism, classism. Often we don't even talk about class divides, but it is there. But despite all those differences, food is something that we all can seem to connect about. In my book acknowledgement, I said Malaysians don't eat to live, we live to eat. And in some rare and unorthodox cases, we write a book about it too. So it seems to be a language that we like to draw upon.
So you're uniquely placed. I wasn't going to talk about Malaysia being Malaysian, but it seems interesting to me that you're sort of uniquely placed. I can see how that might have formed your thinking.
Yes, well, I grew up in Europe as well, and Switzerland and Hong Kong, New Zealand, Australia, and in my different careers as a lawyer or an aid in development, it was a way to start conversation when you didn't know what to talk about, and people say, "Oh, you tried this and that," and so I used it as a stepping stone to build relationships.
So in your work internationally, who were you trying to talk to, like, apart from the project with the young people?
Mostly I am working with peace builders, because many people understand peace in different ways. In peace building, we might begin with the word peacekeeping, and that's in war, where soldiers go to deal with the conflict in war zones. But there's also peacemaking between people. Peace building is a larger container word for all of those. How can we create sustainable peace beyond just the individual, societal peace and whatnot? So I've done workshops with peace builders around the world and academics to help them understand there's a way we can do experiential peace building that goes beyond words, beyond a particular skill set, beyond peace agreements. And so often I just share about these ideas I've come across and how I do it in practice. And so that's, in terms of my work overseas, that's largely what it involves. Or it's about speaking about helping offer hope to people overseas. You know, you can believe in peace again, and look, this happens in our everyday context.
Okay, can I just direct you then to the major conflict in the world at the moment, which, well, it's actually Iran now, isn't it? Well, Gaza, which has sort of dropped off the media radar, but you know, that's the latest atrocity or catastrophe. Can you talk about food as a power for conflict and for peace in that context, or a similar one?
So when I was rewriting this book for publication, it was at the beginning of the Gaza conflict. And at that time, you know, there was an issue of food insecurity, food access. So we are very familiar of famines. We're very familiar with starvation being the first tool, earliest tool of warfare. But often we think that we're in war, it's total just war and conflict, but we don't look for the peace that might exist during war.
Within the war.
We're in war.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and so there was this blogger who, during that time, was videoing himself and the rations he was eating during the early stages of the Gaza conflict. And I used that those videos make me think he was hungry for peace. He was demonstrating, look, I have these limited rations. We are all dying from here. But at the same time, food is giving me a form of peace and a semblance of normality. And he was conveying through his lips and his video, look, I'm in a war zone, but I'm not just showing you the everyday, I mean, the conflict outside. This is the everyday consequences of conflict and war. So it's very visual, and it's articulating these everyday experiences of war through the visual, but also through the gut.
Yeah.
And that's something we can all connect with. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just getting away from the gut, but just contemplating people under those circumstances. Everyone is going to have to be actively involved in peace building in order to survive within a war, right? People are going to be learning a lot about how to share and get on with each other and help each other.
Yeah, I think in times of conflict and war, the boundaries of who's your enemy and who's your friend blurs. Mm-hmm. So I have this story I write about in the book about this boy, 4-year-old boy, during World War II in East Malaysia. His name is Yit Ching. And Yit Ching was mauled by a dog and lying on the side of this road. And if you know a bit about the history of Borneo, the Japanese had invaded. So the Japanese were around everywhere. And he had grown up used to thinking of the Japanese as enemies. And so this is the context he's lived in. He lost two sisters during that time, youngest baby sisters, and had seen the Japanese soldiers gun down his community. But as a 4-year-old during this wartime context, very much used to looking after himself, but got mauled by a dog, was lying at the side of the road, bleeding to death. And he said, gosh, this is the end of my life. I don't know a 4-year-old who would think like this, but he remembered that was what he was thinking. This is the end of my life. Out of the corner of his eyes, he's been lying on the side of this road for I don't know how long. He sees this green figure approach him. And before he can do anything, he realizes it's a Japanese soldier. And this Japanese soldier was wheeling a bicycle, looked at the boy for a while, then thought about what he was going to do and picked up the boy and rolled him off. After some time, the boy realizes the soldier had taken him to a clinic. Mm. And this doctor, this soldier talks to whoever, the medics, and the boy was seen. Now, this boy remembers very clearly the soldier at the end of the day gives him his rations of fish. Now, even as a soldier, he's got these rations. This is clearly rations for I don't know how many days. Mm. He gives this boy his food. Now, this boy has not had protein for I don't know. Like, he tells me about how he had to catch cockroaches to survive. He remembered this one moment where his dad caught a snake, cooked it, ate it, and didn't share any with his sons. Mm. His father did that to him.
And yet this so-called enemy soldier.
And at this moment, suddenly this enemy gives him his own rations. So he's depriving him his own body for sustenance and gives it to an enemy boy. Now this boy, his brain is blown, but he's also still half dying. Next day, the soldier comes and checks on him, and then he's never seen that soldier since. This boy's life of all these things he's understood of who's enemy and who's friend, who's foe, has just been smashed. Grows up, becomes a very successful architect. And quite recently, every time there was this university, Waseda University, would send Japanese soldiers for summer program. And he would talk to these kids and say, look, this is a Japanese soldier did this for me. Mind-blowing for them too, because they had grown up with this guilt for a war that they didn't commit themselves, but they were still carrying the burden of that. So this man's story tells us labels are not useful, enemies not useful. You know, peace can also coexist in times of war, just as war can exist in our everyday peace in Australia, yes. Right? Even though it's not the same kind of understanding of war. And so to me, this story is a very poignant example of food is an important tool that's not just this this little thing. Oh, yeah, we can make friends through food. No, it's a very symbolic gesture of peace and hope and strength. And it also, you know, changed lives in a very powerful way.
I really want to dig into that after a little break. So yes. We'll just have a little break and then we'll be right back. Yep.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes on the hillside, little boxes all the same.
I'm sick of the little boxes. Aren't you too? Do you want to live in nourishing, green neighbourhoods where we share and care for one another and our precious planet? Are you sick of greedy people gatekeeping better futures from the rest of us? Then listen to Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence every fortnight on a Friday at 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on 3CR. with myself, Amy, and the wonderful people taking back their cities.
And they all look just the same.
You might have heard about the Community Radio Plus app, but it's only when you start using it that you'll wonder how you lived without it.
You can listen to us wherever you are, at home, work, driving,
on public transport, gardening, protesting, or even in the bath.
Just search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
This is the Local Food Connection show on 3CR 855 kHz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. You can visit the 3CR website and listen to the live streaming of the show. You can go to 3CR Local Food Connections and listen to the podcasts. Today I'm chatting with Elaine Prattley. Elaine is the author of Hungry for Peace, which explores the idea that food is an agent of connection, as well as being an agent of conflict, which we've spoken about just before the break. Elaine, that was a really, really powerful story, and I've heard many stories similar to that about how people behave during a war, including in my own family. So they're actually, those kind of stories are common during a war. They're everywhere when there's a war. That's not the dominant narrative, though, that we hear on Anzac Day or out of the mouths of world leaders. It's all about nationalism, especially at the moment. So we spoke earlier, you mentioned this idea of small acts that can make a big difference. So please reassure me that the small acts, what are these acts that are going to have to be really powerful in order to change that narrative, or some, or at least somehow compete with it?
Well, I talk, in the book, I talk about the symbol of the atom. Is an atom a small thing or a big thing? But the atom bomb, the consequences of an atom bomb, was global and went through time, right? Also talk about in a recent Peace Kitchen event. So we have these events where we foster dialogue through food, whether it's a public event or for private events. And we in this recent one at a Women Deliver conference, we used this symbol of breaking bread. And in one of the breads that we used, we talked about the yeast, a symbol of yeast. Yeast, I don't know the percentage of it, but imagine it's 5% of the ingredients used and then rest is, 90% flour. But that little yeast is able to transform the bread completely. Mm-hmm. It causes it to rise, it gives it a totally different texture, and yet it's a small thing by comparison to the flour, but it's the one that causes transformation. I talk about these symbols of how smallness doesn't denote the size of transformation or the value of transformation.
Yeah.
We're so obsessed about the measuring impact. But what is impact? You know, I can speak to thousands of people, but have I impacted them? Well, I would argue probably not that much, maybe one idea. But if with my two kids, I spend that time with them, just two people, the value to them, in their lives is, if we're going to use the word impactful, more impactful. So what's the value of impact? So I would say maybe size is not, or quantity is not a good measure, but it's still, small can be big. And so in your own show, you interview people every day, every week, about things that they do in their own lives that also change communities. And I would suggest these things collectively lead to so much change. Wouldn't you agree?
It's like, and it's also not quantifiable.
Yes.
It's not even, it's completely unquantifiable.
Yeah, but like if you think about like shopping bags a few years ago when they stopped using plastic bags or offering them, and a lot of people grumbled about these, how inconvenient it was going to be, and yet we've changed our habits so completely since then. Now we started bringing in reusable bags. So you might say, well, what is the impact of plastic bags? But no, we're reducing the usage of plastic bags that are impacting our seas and our animals and living more sustainably. Mm-hmm. These small things, someone thought about that idea mm-hmm. and brought it into being.
And it was, I'm sure your average politician and certainly your average CEO of Woolworths probably couldn't care less about plastic, really. That's probably not, I shouldn't say that, I don't know who they are, but it's probably not uppermost in their mind. Mm. And yet they were willing to take that action under the pressure from somewhere.
Well, but the fact that they decided it was valuable suggests that they think the community thinks it's valuable.
Yep.
And the way community thinks it's valuable, someone had to be the crazy person at the beginning
to make like that a change. Crank. Yep.
And then over time, that created a momentum, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one example. But there are many things that we don't think is important, like my life. I talk very early in the book about how I became a peace builder because one boy noticed me in school when I started new school. I had no friends for half a year. I moved to Europe. I couldn't speak the language. I pretended that I was busying myself every lunchtime because I had no friends. I couldn't speak the language. I didn't understand culture. I sat by myself for half a year every lunchtime, friendless. And I was the 13-year-old, so you can imagine. Oh. And this boy noticed me after 6 months, invited me to share lunch with him and his friends. 13-year-old boy, so the friends didn't speak English, also felt very awkward. So it's not a comfortable thing, but it was life-changing for me because his act of compassion and the fact that he noticed me changed me. And I made a promise to myself as a 13-year-old, I would make sure that no other person felt like they were on the margins, friendless and whatnot. So you could say that was a very everyday decision.
By one young, very insignificant person.
Yeah, this boy never even thought he was going to change, but he changed my life. That accumulated to over time me thinking I'm going to become a bridge builder. I'm going to be a peace builder. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be a friend to someone. Well, what is the impact for that? I don't know, but it changed my life. So that for me was meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. So when you were talking there, I was thinking, look, that's probably what's holding the world together. It's all those millions and millions of small acts of kindness and humanity. And in fact, maybe that's more powerful. It looks as though Donald Trump and the government of Iran are very powerful at the moment and the multinational corporations. Maybe if you were to quantify it, they're actually less powerful than the millions and millions of things that we're helping each other.
I think the whole system's been in the form of rupture at the moment. Mm-hmm. But like all the superpowers are a bit confused and all the middle powers are thinking, hang on, we have to step up. And all the smaller countries are like, well, we can't rely and we have to form our own regional blocks. And also we need to be more reliant, right? So I think all our former understandings of superpowers and structures, we're in transition and now's a great time to change things.
That's the only time usually, isn't it, in history that we can get. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a very positive way to look at it too. So we've got a crisis and then opportunities that are going to come out.
Well,
of that.
As a peace builder, I always say conflict is neutral. And it offers a time for growth and change and possibility. Mm-hmm. Like in my marriage, I have conflict all the time. But what makes us stronger rather than ghosting each other is coming together and understanding, right? Yeah. At the same time, rupture is a time for possibility.
Yeah.
So as a peace builder, we deal with despair. But we also deal with hope. We have to hope for the world and say, God, come on, guys, there's a possibility that's standing right there.
Yeah. That's a really great perspective. Mm. How do you see activism? And where do you compartmentalize those big, powerful, destructive forces in your mind? Do you think it's not my job to deal with that? I'm just going to deal with this over here, or do you see a way of taking that on directly?
So I talk about the word entanglement in my book, and I say the understandings of what is small, what is big, what is peace, what is conflict is not as helpful because they all intertwine. You know, conflict can lead to peace. Peace can be caring, but it can also be violent, which is a complicated argument to make. Here, this small people, like you think of the school's student strike for climate change or Greta Thunberg, and it was one person, and she was not intending, I assume. She did not expect that it was going to snowball, right? But it did. And now Donald Trump knows who she is.
Right, yeah.
And so I think we never know the possibilities that we might have. But at the same time, there are many things that we do. We never see the fruit of our work. It's often maybe other people have built on it, or it might happen after we've passed on.
Yep.
So I think it's very hard to know.
So I'm thinking of words like humility and faith. Just do what you think is the right thing to do, and trust, and we don't know what's going to happen to the American Empire, how bad it's going to be as they decline, and we don't know, as you say, about how much influence what you're doing, your book might have, for example. So we just have to act anyway.
Yeah, I think I view it as that we're all, I would say, what's a good phrase, children of God. We're all humans, and we have something that connects us, and that's the power of food. We food shows us that we are all very human. We need to eat.
Such a basic.
It's very basic, but it also shows that our need for hope, our need to feel seen and understood, those things need to connect us, and we need to be remembering those things, that we are all more. There's more that connects us than divides us.
I agree with. I think that's true. More that connects us than divides us. Okay, we've only got a few more minutes, and you've already said many inspiring and wonderful things. I love the atom and the yeast analogy. What is a final thing you want to, if you've only got 1 minute to speak, what's the most important thing you want to say?
I'd like people to know that we all have potential for peace, and also the people you least expect to do something positive also has the potential for peace. And so to look at what we're doing and thinking, in what ways am I saying something that's connecting people and dividing people. There are people who intend to do something positive, you know, on social media, and they're trolls sometimes. The intention is there, but the way we're doing it can cause division. So think about the ways we're connecting. How are you doing something? And is this, are you inadvertently causing dissension or division through the words, even though your heart is there? So
it's not a simple matter of just going around with a big bulldozer of goodness.
Yeah.
It's a bit of subtlety and...
Yeah, like your aim is for justice, but are you banging people in the heads with your book? Yeah. Or are you demonstrating it through your words and your acts? Some acts speak louder than words sometimes. And so go back to that basic kind of way.
Okay, tell people the title of your book, your name, and where they can get it.
Yeah, my book's Hungry for Peace, Food Peace Building in an Entangled World. My name's Elaine Prattley. You can look at it, find the book on Amazon.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much, Elaine. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Right, so that is all we've got time for. You've been listening to Local Food Connections on 3CR, and today we've been speaking with Elaine Prattley. Before I go, I'd just like to say thank you for all the donations that came in during Radiothon. But just to say that 3CR is still $40,000 short of the $300,000 that we need in order to keep going. So please, if you would like to do a small act of goodness today, perhaps donate a little bit of money to 3CR, mention the Local Food Connections show if the ideas on this show resonate with you, And every little bit helps. So feel free, if you've forgotten to donate and you're intending to, you still can. Just go to the website and you'll see the button there. Until next week, love the land you're on, share your surplus, take care of each other. If you value independent media, please donate or become a 3CR subscriber. 3CR depends on financial support to continue to broadcast. Stay tuned now to 3CR for more Radical Radio with Latin American Update. Bye for now.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.